when my phone went off about 7:45 and said flash flood warning, I knew that today would be an adventure. And to be honest with you, there are more people here than I expected to be here after getting that kind of information, which I'm sure many of you did. Apparently, it isn't quite as bad as they expected it to be, but nevertheless, there are obstacles and hurdles to overcome out there. Bite your tongue. What does that mean? For some people, it means they literally bite their tongues. People who have particular issues, as I've gotten older and dealing with a neurological issue, that happens more and more frequently, and it's less and less fun every time. But generally, when you hear somebody say, bite your tongue, they're talking about not saying what you're thinking, to just bite down and hold on to it and not really say it. Now, for a long, long time, that's been a pretty popular idea. But in our world today, there are all kinds of voices out there saying, no, just say it. It's not in your best interest psychologically or emotionally to hold it in. Let it out. Let it roll. And probably we've all seen some of the complications that are created by those kind of things. It certainly feels good. But the long-term impact could be just a little bit different. And maybe we're looking for some balance here in that kind of approach. Last week, we started looking at the passage about our voice and speaking and using the human tongue from James chapter 3. And I divided things up so that we could have a shorter presentation last week. And so we'll go back to that presentation today. James chapter 3, we're going to start in verse 1 and go through verse 6 as a reminder of what we talked about last week. Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. And so we have this image of the tongue is a bit in a horse's mouth. The tongue is the rudder that drives the ship. The tongue is a fire that once it gets out of control. And I finished last week by telling you about the couple in Arizona who were having a gender reveal and wound up setting the forest on fire and owed the state $8 million and how that turned out. It wasn't a very positive thing. But that's the kind of thing that James wants us to remember, is that these things, the use of the tongue, has dramatic ramifications. Well, as we move from verse 6, starting in verse 7, going down to verse 12, we're going to come across two important issues. One is the issue of control, and the second is the issue of origin. So let's look first at verses 7 and 8. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. And he's here reminding those people in their time about how the many creatures of the world can be controlled. In our world, we can see things like a circus elephant or go to a display of killer whales. There's all kinds of things where we can see people who have been able to control extremely large beasts. And we look at that and using this as an example, he's trying to say that it is possible. You can actually do this. You can control what comes out of your mouth. Your voice is a very important part of what you are. Now, it might be easiest if we just said, okay, I'm going to close my mouth and never say another word. Have you ever said that? Have you ever tried that? Sometimes when your therapy is voice usage, just not talking, as many of you know, can be a very, very difficult thing to do. If a person is battling alcohol, battling chemicals, maybe they're battling a pornographic addiction, perhaps they're maybe dealing with things like a gambling addiction, any number of things. Well, what's the treatment recommendation? Well, abstinence is the treatment recommendation. You stop doing that completely. What if you have an eating disorder? Well, you can't do that. It's not about stopping completely. And I'm not saying those other things are easy. They are not. But in eating disorders, you have to continue to eat. And so this moderation and control is a very, very powerful thing. The same is true with our voice. We can't just say, okay, I'm not going to talk ever again. Doesn't work. So we have to learn how to moderately control what comes out of our mouth. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, 7, the last part of that verse. There's a time to be silent, there's a time to speak. Your voice can be used in positive ways. It also could be used in negative ways. And so constantly we're having to bring in discernment to try to choose what we're going to say. And that process can be pretty complicated. Probably for many of us, we've had that experience of saying, okay, I'm going to use my voice the proper way. I'm going to do the right things. The things that come out of me are going to be good and positive, and they're going to be spiritual. And we make that commitment, and we start a new regime. And shortly thereafter, we find ourselves where Paul is in Romans chapter 7, verses 18 through 20. For I know what good itself, I know that good itself does not dwell in me, that is, in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I can't carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but rather the evil I do not want to do. This I keep on doing. Now if I do what I do not want to do, it is no longer I who do it, but it is sin living in me. And despite our best efforts, we find those moments when we go, I couldn't do it. I messed up. I said things I didn't want to say. I used a tone that I didn't want to use. Instead of being encouraging, I was discouraging. And I'm concerned about my Christian witness, and I'm concerned about my character and how people are looking at me and evaluating me because I'm not saying the things that I want to be saying. I don't know if there's anybody here, and I won't do this, but if I said, okay, hold up your hand if you're perfect in what you say. There might be somebody who would actually do that. I know my hand would not go up. That's not something that I could say. I don't say that with any pride at all, but that's the reality. So if that's the reality, how do we handle our imperfection? Well, first of all, I think we need to stop hiding and pretending that we never make mistakes in what we say. It's kind of refreshing sometimes when people say, you know, I made a mistake here. I'm sorry I made that particular mistake. Stop rationalizing. When my kids were at OCA, there was some language taking place in the sports program that was a little bit, too far. And so the people talked to them and said, we've got to reduce this kind of language. And then, like the next basketball game, the coach used not a cuss word, but a marginal word. And the boys all said, Coach, you said. And his response is, that word is not a cuss word. And they even had a chapel meeting where they got up and explained that that marginal word is not a cuss word. Well, you can get about a handful of kids from that time together in a circle, and you can say that word, and they'll all say, that's not a cuss word. That's not a cuss word. We can spend all this time rationalizing what we said. How much better would it just be to say, you know, I don't know how you view that word, but I shouldn't have used it. Sorry. Forgive me. I'll try my best not to use that again. It would have been over in 30 seconds. And sometimes we think, well, no. If you knew the circumstances and if you would understand this and that, and really it wasn't my fault because it just came out of nowhere. And so we try to do all this rationalizing instead of just admitting that we did the wrong thing. Another important issue that is so critical in looking at James is, how does your language change when you're under stress? You know, if it's a great day, you're feeling strong, you're feeling good, everything's going well, you're feeling really spiritual, feeling connected to your spiritual roots, we probably do a better job. But when we get super stressed, things change. Now, why would that be important with James? Well, these people are refugees. They're living the ultimate stressful life. Their life is difficult. Are they going to have a tendency to make more mistakes, especially in this area, than perhaps other people would? Well, I think that would be absolutely so. You know these passages. We've read these passages before. You've studied these passages before. Some of you could probably virtually quote this part, this section of the book of James. We know about it. Intellectually, we understand it. But what comes out of our mouth is not necessarily intellectual, it's emotional. Those moments of fear, those moments of anger, those moments of frustration, those moments of pain, whether it's physical or emotional. And we all know that when you apply those stressors, you have a different kind of result. You frequently have a different kind of consequence. Doesn't make it all right. It just helps us to understand how that battle is taking place. That's why when people come along and say, count to 10, it's just a little bit of a break. And I think it's interesting, if you look at John chapter 8, when the woman in adultery is brought to Jesus, what is Jesus' first action? Well, he's going to kneel down and write on the ground. Is it possible that he's just using a little thinking time? When he stands up and says, okay, whoever's without sin, cast the first stone. Certainly come up with a brilliant conclusion. And sometimes if we take 10 seconds or we take 30 seconds, we're able to blow past all of the things that we want to say to find that place where it's what we ought to say or need to say, and we make a better choice about it. We also have lots of cues and triggers. Probably a lot of people in Oklahoma City, if you said, if you wanted to control your tongue, what would you do? Well, I'd quit going to Thunder games or watching Thunder games, you know. The Thunder can be quite discouraging from time to time, or a lot of the time. We learn certain situations. If you're around somebody who provokes you and you repeatedly find yourself saying things you didn't want to say, then don't be around that person. Recognize that your strategy is to move back, to go away just a little bit. Now let's look at the last four verses, and this part of it is a little bit more painful. Beginning in verse 9, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. What's he saying? He says you've got to go back and examine the origin. You don't just have things come forth from your mouth. They come from our hearts. And often we say, well, I didn't mean that, or I spoke too quickly, or I spoke impulsively. And I knew a couple that the wife was really an impulsive person in terms of what she would say. And she was defending herself for some kind of blow up that she had had. She said, I just have a big old blast and then it's all over. And her husband said, so's a shotgun. There's a consequence that goes there. There's something left when you're done doing that. And we'd like to believe that, oh, that was just something that slipped out. But truthfully, in some fashion, it came from your core. It came from your mind. It came from the essence of who you really are. Matthew chapter 15, starting in verse 18. But the things that come out of a person's mouth, this is Jesus speaking, by the way, come from the heart, and these defile them. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. These are what defile a person. But eating with unwashed hands does not defile them. If we look carefully at our heart, we may decide that working on stopping or working on biting my tongue isn't enough. I've got to go further down inside and evaluate my core. And I may need to change, make serious changes in the way my core functions and in my relationship with God and my understanding of what God wants and needs for me to be doing. Because if it's coming from a dark core, it can't be stopped here. And we look back and reevaluate what the core is really telling us and promising us. I've told you before about my friend who really frustrates me because anytime you complain about anything, he says that's a spiritual issue. And your first impulse is to say, well, but not. And then you think about it a minute, and he's always right. Any problem that you're having, any misbehavior, anything that's slipping in your life, that's a spiritual issue. And that's what Jesus was saying. If you're worried about what comes out of your mouth, if you're evaluating what comes out of your mouth, then go back and evaluate your heart and make sure that it's right. You may have heard the story about the policeman who arrested the woman who was driving her car. She was stopped at a red light, and somebody didn't go fast enough, and so she missed the light, and she was just going nuts. She was honking, and she was making obscene gestures. She was doing all kinds of waving to all the people around, and he said, that must be a stolen car. And she said, why would you for a minute think this was a stolen car? He said, well, in the back of your car, it says, I love Jesus. Follow me to Bible school. Pray every day. I looked at what you were doing and what you had on the back of your car, and I came to the conclusion that there had to be a dichotomy there. What is it? And sometimes those things pop up in our lives as well. Maybe not quite so dramatically, but we get to see the fact that really who I want to be and really who I claim to be, other people aren't seeing that very much. Our tongue is a powerful thing. You can build people up. You can inspire people. You can motivate people. And I'm not talking about publicly. I'm talking about in the private things we say and do. We can have tremendous power by what we say. And of course, we all know we have tremendous power in the negative things we say as well. When I was a boy growing up, I have a younger brother who's much, much younger than I am. This was like around 1960, and most of the cars didn't have air conditioning, and our car didn't have air conditioning either. And this time of year, you just drove around with the windows down. And this guy pulled out in front of my dad and made my dad really upset. And so he stuck his head out the window, and he said some things he shouldn't have said. And my little brother, who's about 2 going on 3, stuck his head out the back window of the back seat and repeated exactly what my dad had said. And I got to tell you, that had a tremendous impact on my father. It really did. Hearing this little guy in the back say exactly what you had said was not only embarrassing, but it brought a reality there. And he really made a conscious effort to be different from that time forward. Sometimes those things happen, and they remind us of how powerful this is. Colossians 4, verse 6, I'll end with this. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Go to the grocery store, you buy some vegetables, and you accidentally get the sodium-free ones. Pour them out into the pan, and when they're warm, you go, what are these? You know, they don't have any salt in them at all. We like to season our salt. Now, we like season with salt. Sometimes when we talk about conversations, when we use the term salty, that means a different thing in our culture. But I think the best way to think about it is, what if you have to eat those words? Wouldn't you like them to be salted just a little bit? Tastes a whole lot better if you have to go back to that place. This morning, I would encourage you to really give some thought to this. It's probably not the kind of thing that creates dramatic change, but it is the thing that deserves a careful analysis and a careful assessment and a shift in our behavior if we find weaknesses there. If we can help you in any way spiritually, we'd be glad to do that if you'd make that known while we sing this song together.